In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oh, crumbs. All right. Let me just wipe the snot off my nose.
Lovely.
And let's do this.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Starting. This is Witherspoon without Angus Haggis. He went home here at the Norwood Club in New York City with our very special guest star, Lucy V. Freeman. And we're going to do a dumpty dum for you all. Yes, Royfield, you're welcome. So I'm Witherspoon.
I'm Lucy.
Brian.
Michelle.
Teresa.
Jenna.
Master Miles.
Philippe.
Juliet.
Sheila, one part of the Dumpty Sisters.
Sue.
That's New York, Nigel, to you all. All right. One, two, three.
Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dumpty, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum.
Bye. Well done, you all.
Can I be really snipey about that? Because I wasn't there.
It's a bit slow, wasn't it?
Well, like a mournful dirge, I reckon.
Oh, Roy, if you sound awful.
No, that's what Malta does to you, Lucy. That part, that island is too fast-paced. I tell you, it's all going off down there. You come back a wreck. You go down there.
You said it was for pensioners. What are you talking about?
Well, I tell you, Valletta, whew, it's a hot pot of a hot spot of action. I tell you, what a beautiful, beautiful place. I recommend anyone to go there. Quick weekend break, lovely and warm. £80 return on Ryanair. Oh, bloody hell, Ryanair's horrible, though. Jesus yeah. Christ. You might just fly the plane yourself. Yeah. God.
No, they probably charge you extra for that as well. £15.
Well, I only forgot. I never register online. You know, you go, I obviously take a lot of flights and stuff. I never register online. Never ever do. Because you just turn up and you wave your passport and you get sorted. You push it in one of those machines, you know, when you're going to check in, or you just take it to the person there and you just sorted. I don't think it's just a waste of time and effort. Not on Ryanair. £55, thank you very much, please, yeah. For them to check you in. I was like, oh, God, never going to make that mistake again. No. But anyway, Lucy, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the sensei, that is, well, I'm the snotty person that is Royfield Brown, that should be. And with me, I have the sweaty matron with the
a bandana.
I stopped, I was going to read it again. With a bandana slipped over one eye, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Ambridge's new hobby, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum was sent in by the New York Posse. Yeah, I don't like them because I wasn't there, so it was rubbish. So if you can do a better one, that wouldn't be hard because it was rubbish because I wasn't there. Why don't you, Lucy, tell us how people can send in. Oh, God, I'm really not on it today, am I?
Nope.
Not on it more than normal. Right, Luce, now I'm going to pull myself together. I'm pretty sure that any old random listener to this podcast could do a better rendition of Barwick Green than that.
Right? Charming.
Right. So, if they're going to do that, how can they do that?
If you'd like to leave us your thoughts or a plot prediction, sing us a Dumpty Dum, Or be so delighted that for once it was someone else's child that stuffed up and not yours, you actually drive all the way over to their house to tell them. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe via dumptydum.com or call us on 0203 0313 105. This week, we need to thank Shambridge for her amazing voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Cosmo for his episode roundups, and to Derek, the Lone in the Back Bedroom. Derek was delighted to hear the news that Angela Merkel and Prince Harry are having a baby, but is worried about it being the first mixed-race royal baby, as no one wants a German baby in the royal family, surely.
That's quite good, that, Liz. Right, now, we've got a shed load of calls. It's like the good old days, Lucy.
I know, there's just millions of people.
Yeah, there's nothing like a last-minute tweet saying, we've got no calls to go and elicit more calls. But on this week's show, of course, from Master Niles, Luke, Claire, Mia, Witherspoon, Ben, Glyn.
Phone's ringing. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Yes.
It's going to be one of those, isn't it? I can tell.
On this week's show, we have calls from Master Niles, Luke, Claire, Mia, Witherspoon, Ben, Glyn, Dusty Substances, and we have a call from Topsy, who was at the meetup. But first, before the smorgasbord of calls, before I wax lyrical about the wonderful island that is Malta, or even the podcast Business Wars, let's brace ourselves for our juicy loose and our week in Ambridge. Oh, God. Yeah, it really is the good old days. All right. Okay, here we go. I'll get the hang of this one day. I trust you.
This week's show was sponsored by the word adaptations and an in-depth discussion of the lavatorial arrangements for the elderly and infirm. We began the week with Linda cornering Jimus in the tea room to recruit him for the rap version of the Canterbury Tales. Jimus said no and then said yes, which is absolutely standard practice for the Christmas show. The bathroom chat was free-flowing. The omnibus edition was like an Armitage Shanks brochure. If Chris wants the bathroom, Auntie Peggy isn't going to be able to tell her to wait for 2 hours. 2 hours? Piggy definitely needs her downstairs facilities looking at. She's on the bog for two bloody hours. Unless, of course, she's reading the paper while having a fag and a cup of tea. Then fair play. Mm-hmm. Peggy doggedly keeps visiting Auntie Cardboard. I can't stay for long, she said. Oh, good, said Chris. You will remember to pick her up again, won't you, Lillian? And can you pick me up a copy of Horse and Hound and Leather Boys on Bikes? I need it for the Stanner Stairlift adverts. The only thing that wasn't about bogs was about research. Ooh, research, research. Tony's researching nursing homes. Natasha, there's lovely look you's researching the possibility of Tom's nuts. Anyone else noticed that they're now doing fruit and nuts at Bridge Farm? It's basically Willy Wonka's chocolate factory now, except it won't even be proper chocolate. It'll be carob. Have you had an accident that wasn't your fault? Are you looking for a no-win, no-fee solicitor to represent a posh boy who pleaded guilty after being caught bang to rights for dealing drugs to the proles? Then contact Bent and Nine Bob Note Solicitors, Phelps. It's not exactly the Shawshank Redemption, is it? Unless Freddie's been befriended by a 150-year-old black man, steals a teaspoon, puts a poster of Princess Eugenie and hollows out a tunnel from cell block B, which, knowing Freddie, will end up emerging in cell block D. You could do some education, said Elizabeth. Oh, yeah, I could learn how to read and write, said Freddie. No, actually, I could. Fat Paul fell through a chair in the cider club. Joe started sniffing glue and then announced that folk don't mind crack. What the hell goes on in the cider club? And why has harassment not busted that? It sounds like Laurel and Hardy does train spotting. This week, basically the time we didn't spend at Auntie Cardboard's bedside, we spent with Joe and Eddie while they hoisted a port-a-loo onto the back of a flatbed truck. On behalf of Archer's listeners everywhere, if this was your first week, honestly, it's not always... No, it is actually. There's occasional bouts of hot custard, but mostly it's occupational health and carsies. Shula, Helen and Emma went to karate class. When you live on your own, it's good to get out and do things, said Shula. I've got bell ringing, karate, judging people, and Wednesdays I've set aside for malicious phone calls. She quite enjoyed the karate class, though. You did ever so well, Shula, for an old fat woman, said Helen. Yes.
Sorry. Oh, God. Oh, dear.
Yes, said Shula. I haven't made noises like that since I over-oiled my pommel. Talking of riding, Brian and Jenny saddled up their high horses and cantered over to Lower Loxley. How dare you have produced a son who provided drugs to our drug-taking granddaughter, the spawn of our drug-taking daughter, they said. Our drug-taking daughter would be having this conversation with you if she wasn't doing rep in Stockton on tea, so she isn't available to be outraged, so we're doing it without her. The ewes nearly knocked David over in an effort to get to the feed, which David then described as them being randy. I mean, I know there's a phenomenon of hangry, but not randgry. David, the fact that he confuses the two could explain why Ruth hates cooking so much. Every time he says he's hungry, Ruth ends up bent over the deep freeze one way or another. Yeah. Adam and Brian had the same row they always have. In fact, I think they may have just played the same tape from a few months back. This time it was about black grass, which I presume they got from Freddie. And finally, we ended Wee Wink. Well, sorry. And finally, we ended Wee Week on the Archers. It's a bit like Pastry Week on the Bake Off, but more absorbent. With Piggy wazzing her family's inheritance up the wall by paying for Auntie Cardboard's extended stay at the Laurels. It's just the room charge so far, but what Piggy's not banking on is the final total, which will include the services of Alejandro, the gay Grable's masseurs, who's hoping to get Auntie Cardboard's wobbly hips up round her ears. And good luck with that. The end.
Oh, well done. Oh, you know what? So much sharper than your last one, this one.
Do you know what? With you, I'm jet lagged and you've got a stinking cold. So this is going to be a very half-assed dumpty-dum with limping hosts.
Well, no, because we've got so many calls to help like pep us along. All we need to do is just play them and just go. And the next one is, the next one is, because actually we do have some very 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 good calls this week. Now, you didn't mention the Bulls Quiz Night.
No, I didn't. Did I?
You know, there was that whole thing about the Bruce Almighty and It's a Wonderful Life thingy. Yeah. You know, Kerry slip that in because that actually happened in a real life quiz.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he tweeted it out. He said he went to a quiz and that happened. So, yeah. So he threw that in. So I just thought I'd just say that. Fair so, thing. Yeah. What else? You're Alistair. He is coming into his own. You said he was. Yeah, I know. Mm. He's all upbeat and optimistic.
Yep.
That's what being married to Shula does to you. Just beats you down, doesn't it?
I know. And people are going, do you think they're going to get back together? But I kind of hope they don't, really, because I think if you're with somebody that makes you a bad version of yourself, you know, a version of yourself that you don't like, he actually sounds like he likes himself now. And he didn't sound like he did before. And, I mean, even she sounds sort of slightly better. So maybe they just needed a good shake-up, but I don't think then you must go get back together again, because then if it's the dynamics of the relationship that's wrong, you're just going to end up being the person you don't like again.
Now, you'll probably have more of a handle on this than me, but these statistics for couples that were married and then split up for whatever reason and get back together must be relatively high. Or more to the point, it's not that uncommon. Let me put it that way. Mm. All right. So what is the state of that second relationship when they come back?
I think it's remembering that you've got a choice. Mm. I know it sounds ridiculous, but sometimes I hear the way... Oh, that's right. Where was I? I was somewhere in Devon.
The Lower East Side.
I don't know. I was in Devon. At a wildlife park. Uh-huh. And this man had a spaniel with him, and the spaniel smelled something in one of the animal. There were like little hutches, and there was clearly a rabbit or something in there. And mm-hmm. without meaning to, the spaniel just made an absolute beeline for this this rabbit, whatever it was, and roared over to the hutch. And as soon as the man realized, he said, "Oh God," because he didn't want it to frighten the rabbits. So he said, come away. And he pulled the dog away. And that was it. End of. And his wife had seen him. And she came. I've never seen the word bristling with anger. She literally was. Mm-hmm. She came marching over to him. And in front, I was standing there. I think my son was standing there. Lots of people were around. She said to him, "What is the matter with you? You are such an idiot." She's going like this. And honestly, if she'd spoken to a child like that, you would have called the authorities. It was just awful. And I thought, you're talking to another adult. He just made a mistake. I mean, God knows what. I mean, for all I know, he's an absolute nightmare to live with and whatever. But you do see so many couples in long-term relationships that just, it's not even lack of respect. It's just lack of civility. There's not even politeness. It's almost like an absolute determination to sort of humiliate the other one. It's just awful. And I think when you've got that sort of level of familiarity, then it is just that you just, if when you get to the stage where you've just got contempt and boredom for each other, you need reminding that you have got a choice about whether or not you stay with that person, or, you know, you chose that. And I think when people split up and then get back together, it's because they've been reminded forcibly that they have a choice about who they're with and why. And if you don't think about that choice very often, that's what you end up with. You just end up with just regarding the other person as sort of a piece of irritating furniture where the leg keeps coming off or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. But did you answer my question, which is, how does the second, when you get back with them the second time?
But I think it's much nicer because you have reminded yourself that you've reminded yourself that you've chosen that person for a reason, and you've reminded yourself what that reason was, and you've willingly chosen them again. So I think you're then much more tolerant of the other person because you've sort of reminded yourself of what your options are.
Yeah, I think so. Because it is marked that he's all happier and he's come to terms with it. And there's nothing like running to get the endorphins going, and so that you just feel more positive anyway. Now you get out of bed in the morning, you're like, it's a new day ahead. You know, it's all right. I can face it. You know, and you just want to do things. You know, and you know, there's not the anyone ever breaks up from a relationship, do something where you physically have to get a bit of a sweat on, because you just feel so much better. It does something to your brain chemistry. You know, and that's utterly marked with Alistair. And I think, you know, and I think it's interesting also that Shu, look, bear in mind that, you know, she's the dumper as opposed to the dumpy. But yeah, you know, her doing the karate with Helen was I think quite an interesting and instructive scene this week.
Yeah.
But talking about interesting and instructive scenes, Natasha and Tom. Now, why couldn't he just ask her out, Lucy?
I think he's lost all faith in himself after Kirsty. He now feels like he's a sort of an unexploded bomb. He kind of feels like he walks into situations and he doesn't know when he's going to sort of, oh dear, it's making it sound like premature ejaculation. I don't mean that.
That's the image that I had.
It's just, because he doesn't properly understand yet what happened to him when he jilted Kirsty, because he doesn't understand what triggered that, he doesn't really trust his own ability to judge relationships anymore, because he's scared that it might happen again, that he might lead someone on, he might give them the wrong impression. He's, you know, that's why he was so determined to make it absolutely clear with Hannah, you know, is this okay? Is it okay for me? You're not going to be cross if I go out with someone else now. And, you know, and she had to reply in similar vein to make it absolutely crystal clear to him that it was all right. I think he's just lost all faith in himself.
I don't know about all faith, but there is definitely something, you know, old Tom with the woman from the supermarket way back when, like about 12 years ago, was straight in there, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Mr. Uji Smooze. So he didn't need a second invitation to ask her out. Though I did think it was nice, quaint, cute, whatever the word is, I can't quite think, the whole scene with Hannah, because actually I just thought for a moment, well, Tommy's not a bad person, he's a bore, but yeah. I just thought, you're a nice guy. He was making sure.
Yes.
Even though
yes.
she's very clearly said at the start, this is what yeah. it is, we're going yeah. to enjoy it. She's going out with Ryan or whoever. I can't quite remember his name, but she, you know, she's chasing after somebody, some other bloke's tail. But, you know, I just thought, you know what? Good for you. You're a decent yeah. guy. You're just making yeah. sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And he didn't ask Natasha, there's lovely look you out first, and then go to Hannah and say, actually, I've done this. Was that okay?
Mm.
He didn't, because he didn't want to, because if she'd said no, he'd have then had to have not gone out with Natasha, or, like, you know, he's absolutely making sure that the field is clear, because he, you know, he needs that reassurance, because he, you know, he sort of doesn't, he's realized that his previous behavior was a bit sort of rash around women. Mm. So he's now trying to think over, but as a result, he's kind of overthinking everything. But, you know, better to overthink than underthink.
Well,
where
that's
dating's
that's
concerned.
The, that's the Bridge Farm lot, isn't it? They overthink yeah. everything with their business plans and spreadsheets.
He's probably drafting a report as we speak. A SWOT analysis of yeah.
Then he'll have a field study next week. But it did make me think, right? All the business of farming. So you've got Brookfield, and they do chop and change a little, don't they? They had the new shed some time ago and all this kind of malarkey, I can't quite remember. Then you've got the home farm lot. But there is something crushingly boring about this bunch and when they go about business, apart from the fact, and we talked about it before, that they chop and change all over the place. The fact that they're still in business, heaven only knows how that's even come about, really. And it does feel very much like a cottage industry. Which is a tenuous link for me just to quickly talk about this very quickly, Lucy.
Okay.
This podcast called Business Wars, and it sounds like something you just think, oh, God, it is so good. These American podcasts, and it's not an NPR one, but they have this great way of giving you hardcore information, but in a very conversational, chatty way. It's one of those. There's a podcast called Planet Money, which is awesome, but I'm not here to big that up. But Business Wars is brilliant. And what they do is they have two classic brands going up against each other historically. So Coke versus Pepsi. What right. a fascinating history. So the bloke who invents Coke, Mr. Pemberton, in the 1890s is this drug fiend. And I think he sold the rights to the recipe for like $500, and then was dead like 9 months later, you know, just addicted to whatever drug and whatever. And then you've got all the imitators and Pepsi come along and how they get market share. Each episode's about 20 minutes long, and it's the history of a business jewel. It is fascinating. So Business Wars, if you want to, it's just a great podcast, and I just wanted to throw that in because I've been meaning to mention it for weeks, and there's a tenuous link talking about the business of home farm, and there you go. So right now, back on to Ambridge matters. I think I was a little bit mean when we did the live show about Auntie Chris.
Were you?
I said, what's the point of her? Just bump her off.
No, you actually suggested we should have her put down. I think that were your words.
Well, I suppose the point of her is elderly care, isn't it?
Yes.
That is the point, you know. Yeah. It's just, as a character, she hasn't been compelling for 30 years. Since her hubby died, she's just, well, her nickname says it all, really. And it's no slur on the fine work that the actor does. But no. I just think, you know, she's just not been served up with anything really worth commenting on, other than old people are gullible, they get scammed. Old people are infirm. Old people have worries about their health, which is something that Miss Mid-City goes on about ad nauseum, doesn't she? That, you know, how comes none of the old people are suffering from dodgy hips?
At least half of them should have type 2 diabetes, judging by the
amount of cake
national
to eat.
Statistics. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sorry, Auntie Chris. I do know the reason why you're on the Archers now, and it's just to remind us that our senior citizens have health issues. Right. We've got so many calls, so there are so many more notes I've got here. Why don't we just, like, get on with the course.
Yeah.
I could, and then through one of the stings, I'm going to wipe my nose or something. So, all right then. So let's do this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Right, shall we start off with the US of A and Master Niles?
Yes.
Hello, this is Master Miles. I'm normally somewhere in upstate New York, but at the moment I'm somewhere in New York City, where last night I attended a really great meetup with a dozen Dumpty Dummers organized by Witherspoon and graced by the presence of Lucy V. Freeman. So thanks to them for that. Like most great dinner parties, we spent the evening gossiping about people who weren't there. That is, the citizens of Ambridge. So about them. The Bridge Farm Archers continue to baffle and bore me in equal measure. They're a four-person family farm that runs like a giant consulting company, focused entirely on process and prolonged decision-making, not on product. They've had at least four major family meetings to choose between cows and trees, so of course they've opted for both. Now that they're going ahead with Tom's agroforestry plan, you might think the next step would be to plant some actual fucking trees. But now the combined brain power of Tom and Helen is needed to plan some exciting site visits. It makes me wonder what exactly was in Tom's plans at all those family meetings. Apparently just a crayon drawing of a tree with a heart carved into the trunk saying Tom and Natasha. Why she still gives him the time of day is a mystery, but my prediction is that she's just angling to get her bottled juices into the farm shop. Speaking of bottled up juices, I love the Grundy's plan to install a port-a-john outside the cider club. Nothing enhances the sour reek of homebrew cider like the whiff of an unmaintained chemical toilet. And we thought the toxic waste at home farm was bad. I also smell something funny about Josh this week and his offer to let Johnny come over to watch him do the milking. It's not like Josh to be this nice, so I'm predicting that before long, Johnny will be taking over most of Josh's milking as well. Yeah. But at least it'll give Johnny a chance to see how a competent farm works. That's all I've got for this week. So thanks, keep up the good work, and I'll see you soon.
I did think that was very suspicious as well.
Yeah, he sounded too... He's quite unlikable, isn't he? Yeah, he just sounded too keen. I did like him when he was sort of a bit abashed about Elizabeth coming down and complaining about him apparently gossiping about Freddie. And then he sort of said, I've made your cup of tea, Auntie Elizabeth. Thank you, Auntie Elizabeth. And he suddenly sounded like a person. Which was quite sweet, I thought. But he's not a likable boy. I could just see Johnny absolutely being ripped off royally on that one.
Mm, absolutely.
You can hear it in his voice. He says, oh, so you need to... Yeah, he did quite well, but he needs a bit more practice. And I thought, at what point are you going to say, oh, he needs to do it himself now to build up his confidence. And then, Johnny's basically running two jobs and only being paid for one.
Exactly. Right, now, this is Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. So fantastic to see everyone last week in Birmingham. Really enjoyed it. And I think I may have made a new convert to the show. So hi, Liz, if you're listening. Wanted to talk today about the situation at the lodge. Firstly, how is there no downstairs toilet at the lodge? I can't believe that Peggy has got to this age and has nursed Jack there for quite a long time. And she had a stroke, didn't she, or something? And there's still no downstairs toilet, and they've never mentioned it before that it might be a good idea. I mean, you just thought they might have done that 10 years ago. So I find that all a bit bizarre. But just like the ever in expanding number of bedrooms, some of the interior arrangements of these homes in the Archers don't become apparent until they're a plot point. So there you go. About time they did have a downstairs toilet, quite frankly. And as predicted, I was going to ring in and predict that she'd pay for the laurels for Christine to hide the fact that Christine has unwisely spent all her money and lost it. So my plot prediction now is that something will happen. Christine will still be in the laurels and Peggy will die or something will happen and someone will have to take over her financial affairs and they'll realise that Peggy's paying for it. And the family will get even more upset because, frankly, they were treating Christine like some sort of horrific parasite already just for having a fall. And so goodness knows what's going to happen. And by the by, I don't really remember exactly how Christine is related to anyone. She's not the closest relative to everybody, but literally half the village has been into the hospital. I mean, goodness knows, she must have the most wonderful personality, because I find that quite unlikely that, like, hordes of full-time working people have managed to make it in the very small slot for hospital visiting hours, and they're all coming and telling each other how she's doing. Goodness me, I wish I was so lucky. Anyway, keep up the good work. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Do you want to do the family tree?
No. Well, I'm rubbish at that.
Well, all right. So Christine is Peggy's sister-in-law. So Christine was the sister of Phil, who is David's father. And she was the brother, she was the sister, sorry, of Jack, who was Peggy's husband. So the three of them were siblings. So she is everybody's aunt or great aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I completely agree. Like when Adam turned up for the hospital visit, I was thinking, what? You know, he's absolutely, he keeps going around saying, oh, I'm so busy. I haven't got time. Oh, just one rasher of bacon. I haven't got time to eat two. And you think, oh, do you know what? Put one on top of the other and get it down, you big idiot. But, yes, but apparently you can clear up, you know, it costs a fortune to park. You're only two people are allowed in at once. The visiting hours are about an hour. That's, you know, it's just so unrealistic that that many people would go in, even if she was, as you said, you know, Mother Teresa or something. It would be highly unlikely that that many people could get in to visit her, you know, and then, like, you know, go back and tell each other how she's doing and everything. And
well, yeah, here's the thing, though, right? This morning on Radio 4, there was something, there's a show about loneliness, a program about loneliness, and they were talking about interdependent cultures and independent cultures. And generally north of Europe and North America is independent cultures. You know, we don't have that wider extended family. And then in the Mediterranean and dare I say the rest of the world, we have interdependent cultures. And one of the things which I like about the Archers is that all the families aren't just nuclear. You have these nuclear families as the hub, but there is, you know, the Archers fundamentally are three families: Bridge Farm, Brookie, and then Home Farm. You know, one of the branches of the Archers family are called Aldridges, but Jennifer was an Archer. And then you've got Peggy and whatever. And I kind of like that. Me being kind of West Indian parentage, I'm, you know, this feels very real to me. But also, this is a docudrama, in parentheses, a soap. So you've got to play up the fact that people are actually related to each other anyway. So it's going to be, the wick is going to be turned up a little bit higher than it would in real life, so to speak.
Yeah.
But yeah, would Adam find the time during the day to go there if he's worrying about the black grass and Brian just torn a strip off him?
Well, everything else that Ian helpfully listed for us as his duties.
Hmm. But I saw this great comedian last month in the East Bay in San Francisco, and just absolutely brilliant. And this black guy, and he says, Lucy says, I'm fed up with being black. You white people are so much more rational and whatever. I don't need to be black anymore. And he says, take the instance of death. I was traveling in the car with my friend Brad. Brad takes a call from his brother, Pete. And he goes, hi, Brad. Hi, Pete. Grandma's dead. Oh, my God, she's dead. Yes. Oh, that's bad. Okay, well, the funeral will be next week, Tuesday. Okay, well, I'll bring the family. Okay, brother, love you. Love you, too. And he says, he puts the phone down. And he says, what's happened then? He says, Grandma's died. He says, oh, okay. And the sister just drove on. And he says, if you were black, you could not have that conversation and be so calm. And Lucy, this is so true. All right. And it just goes this whole thing of kind of wider extended families. And he says, so, and I've witnessed this. The phone rings, ring, 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 ring. You pick up the phone, she's dead. Who's dead? Who's dead? She's gone. Who's gone? You know. Even me, Lucy, I have been on the end of calls like that ad nauseum. It's just so true. And he says it takes you 5 minutes to find out who's actually dead. There's no calmness. Right. This person's wailing. Whatever. It was just, you know, this whole thing about culture. So I must admit, somebody with West Indian parentage, I love all the wider stuff. And my wider family is something which is kind of real to me. But this is a soap, you know, so they've got to play all that stuff up. But, you know, just to answer Claire from Clapham's question, you know, she's everybody's aunt and great aunt. So, right now,
my grandma used to like going in to visit ill friends because she would find out what everyone else on the ward had and who they were. she was always much more interested in the person she wasn't visiting than the person she was, and she'd just use the ill person that she knew to sort of mine them for information about who. What about the lady at the end? She doesn't look very well at all. Oh, is she? Oh, from the big houses in Abingdon. Oh, you know, and they'd be sort of, you know. And you think you're only here for the gossip. You've got no genuine interest in the person that's about to cark it. Anyway,
well, a couple of things just quite quickly. My occupational therapist friend was very pleased that it was an occupational therapist that said that the lodge was not fit for Christine, as opposed to the social worker. So they always say it's the social workers come around.
Yeah, no, someone else tweeted and said, ha ha, thank you for mentioning the occupational health person. Yes.
Because she's forever going out to people's homes doing that. And she says, I get upset when they always say the social worker has done that. So big thumbs up from Becky, because she says, well, well done, Kerry, for getting your facts right for a change. And secondly, has to be said, one of the best weeks of my life, Lucy, guess where I was?
I don't know.
I was about 17, 18, hospital. I had to go to hospital for a whole week. And did tests because my balance went.
Ooh.
Yeah. Always used to be able to run and dodge. Used to play rugby and I was a winger and all this kind of stuff. And my balance just went. And so they did all these lumbar plunges and all manner of tests and didn't find anything wrong with me. So back to being in hospital for a week. It was, what was that really dodgy soap opera in the 80s on that hospital ward? Do you remember? And they're all wearing dressing gowns.
Oh, that was a sitcom.
Yeah, what did I call
it? I'm H-A-P-P-Y. Yeah. I am H-A-P-P-Y. Yes.
I tell you, everybody was like a character off of a soap. It really was. There was the sexy nurse. There really was. Right. There was the student nurse who didn't know what she was doing. Then there was the matron. Then there was the old fat guy in the corner just farting all the time. And he'd just go, it's thundering over Bill's mother's. You know, that's all he ever said. Like, and you, oh, God. Right. There was the bloke snipping out for a fag all the time. It was brilliant. It was, you know, and I was by far the youngest person on the ward. And I think another reason why I really liked it was because I was only 17 and I was on an adult ward. So I was being let into, you know, the adult world for the first time and treated as an equal.
Yeah.
You know.
But also you just get to lie down and people bring you food. That's what I've been moaning consistently about flying back from New York. Well, flying because I hate flying overnight. I hate it.
Why? Because I'm just quite sleep.
No, I can't. I can't sleep on flights. But going out there, I quite like it. Because when it's not a night flight, because basically it is like being a child. You're completely infantilized. You're in this very, you're in your travel seat. You're covered with a blanket. They bring you food. They turn the lights off and they want you to be quiet and go to sleep. And there's like 200 people completely infantilized. It's quite nice.
No, listen, I couldn't agree with you more.
And you get to watch TV that you would never watch normally.
Yeah.
You're sort of trapped. You can't do anything else. And yes, and then the lady came round with ice creams halfway there. Really? She suddenly turned up with a basket full of Magnums, and I thought, this is crackers.
Wait,
and
I thought, what airline were you flying with? BA or
British
something?
British Airways.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So she comes around with these magnums, and I was thinking, I must be dreaming. This is because I was thinking about this. You know, this is, I'm being totally infantilized. I thought she'll be along with a bottle in a minute and tip my seat back and say, right, nighty nighty, turn the lights off. It's quite great, quite good.
Well, British Airways, great airline, twice they've upgraded me because I was just nice. So a big thumbs up to them. But I can't afford to travel British Airways, unlike some. Freeman. But anyway, what a wonderful airline. What a wonderful advert for our nation. Right, now, shall we have Glyn?
Yes.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. It's been a few weeks since I called in. I think it's more a case of lack of time and opportunity than lack of inspiration with the Archers. Although I confess, the latter must have played a little bit of a part. Not that excited about the Freddy story, really, to be honest. And definitely not excited about the Tom and Hannah story. Yes, Freddie's been all over social media since he's been banged up. But there seems to be remarkably little on social media, at least recorded or reported, about Lily and Russ. And surely, you know, everyone at the college must have worked out what's going on. And surely that would be all over social media as well. So I'm a bit confused about that. I'm also very, very surprised that we haven't heard anything from Lily since Freddie has gone down. You'd have thought she would at least have appeared once at Lower Loxley to, if only to berate Elizabeth for being a terrible mother. I am pleased that they have finally decided to do another. Elderly parent or elderly relative care story. I think that's been a missing element in the village for a while. Slightly contrived that Chris has got the fairy godmother in terms of Peggy to pay all the care bills, but maybe there's a few twists and turns going on there. But I think for many listeners, this will be a story that that resonates. So glad they're doing it. Thank you very much for continuing to do this wonderful podcast. I really enjoyed listening to the live edition from Birmingham, and best wishes to all in Dumpty Dumland.
I hope Glyn comes next year. I like him, you know.
Yes, he's lovely.
We have some wonderful, wonderful listeners. And I'm just going to take this opportunity, Lucy, and this is just kind of come to me. I just thought Glyn Fuller Love is just a properly decent bloke. And I love when he's been to the live shows and had a little bit of a chat with him before. But Andrew Horn, right, he was just so lovely that whole weekend, kept on asking me if there's anything he could do. And I said, oh, no, nothing. And he says, well, I'll conduct the dum-de-dum. Like, he actually wanted, like, to do stuff. And, you know, and he's an integral part of our caller inners and stuff, and an integral part of the audience. But there was a point when I saw him with Amy Gilbert taking her arm as we were doing the canal walk, and they were just walking on ahead because obviously Amy's blind, and so he's taking her arm. And then I think there was a point when she must have said, oh, let me just see what the canal is like for a bit. So maybe for about 2 minutes you let go of her arm. And she, with her stick, was kind of feeling her way and walking. And then he just kind of calmly got her arm back again. And I just thought, you know what? We have such a bloody lovely, considerate set of listeners. And then Vicky from Kenya, now Sri Lanka, took her back to the train station, Amy and Topsy and whatever. And just, it sounds really naff and trite. And I am overly sentimental. But we have such a bloody lovely set of listeners. So, Andrew, I didn't say thank you to you at that weekend. But, you know, thank you for everything that you did and conducting not one but two dum-de-dums and just being a total star. So thank you.
Well, I was thinking when I was standing with Witherspoon in the Norwood, and lots of people came that had come last year or whatever it was, 2 years ago. And some people came that had never been and didn't know each other. And we were talking and he said, look, look, look. And we turned around and everybody was nattering away to everybody else. And he said, look, he's, what did he say? It's not like, look what we've done, but look, it's something like that, sort of, look, everybody has got, everybody's happy to be here and everybody knows everybody without knowing them. You know what your common thing is. You know what sort of person someone's going to be because they like the same thing as you. And it was just lovely just to think, God, this thing has got sort of a life of its own. Just wonderful.
No, absolutely. And yeah, there was just so much of that. And when we had the dinner on the Saturday night, because so there's 40 people for dinner and approximately half were Dumdy Dummers and the other half were Archer Single Social people. And I made a point of saying after dinner, right, if you're a Dumdy Dummer, stand up. And I kind of mixed everybody up so everyone could just, so people just weren't in their little cliques and stuff. And
yeah,
we've all got the Archers in common, haven't we? So everybody's like, yep, okay, yep, fine. You know, hello, random new person, but you're not really that random because if nothing else, we can just talk about the nonsense that is Bridge Farm or whatever. And just like, and it was just kind of like lovely. And I just can't wait to organise again for next year. But anyway, Glyn Fuller, love, you're awesome. Andrew Horn, you're awesome. Amy Gilbert, you're awesome. And now we have a call from Topsy, who similarly had a good time at the Dumdy Dum weekend.
Hello, Dumdy Dummers. This is Louise here, or Topsy for Royfield's benefit, coming to you live from Hereford, the home of the official Hereford Bull. And I wanted to quickly talk to you a little bit about the tour last weekend. It was amazing. To come across so many people with a passion for the Archers was just unbelievable. It was a very moving event, really, and I'm just talking rubbish, so it's great. But yes, I wanted to just say a little bit about the tour. The tour of BBC Birmingham was very interesting, especially the bit when we actually got to stand in the Archer studio and literally feel and have a look at and get to handle some of the props that we hear on a weekly or daily basis from some of our favourite characters. I was quite gobsmacked, actually, to learn that the kettle they use is identical to my kettle at home. It's quite something. And also the fact that we stood in the dead room. Now, that was a bit weird. It was a bit like cabin pressure gone mad. You kind of stood there and your head was pounding because there was so much soundproofing. It did feel like you were coming into land from a very, very great height and your head was about to explode. But that was apparently the room where Nigel Pargeter's iconic scream took place. And it, the lady who took us round kind of gave us a bit of a demonstration of that by running around the corner of the room and creating the illusion of distance, which was quite clever. Who would have thought that the stuff that comes out of a mattress could create such an illusion of distance? Anyway, I'm not very good at these messages. I do waffle slightly, so you must forgive me for not being more prepared than I am. And I've already attempted one of these messages and it's not worked very well, so I'm going to soldier on. The canal walk was just a laugh, especially when someone decided to do a Dumpty Dum underneath a bridge under the canal, and alongside the canal. And a cyclist came across us and wondered what the heck we were doing and gave us all a bit of a weird look. I can imagine that being a little bit strange. But anyway, it was good fun. And I want to give a couple of shout-outs before I wrap this up because I don't want to be accused of floundering too much. As I say, I've already attempted this once before and got completely tongue-tied. So, yes, there you go. But I want to give a couple of shout-outs to Andrew, Nancy, Christina. I hope you enjoyed your visit from Michigan to the UK. And others, including Mary, Sean, and, of course, my friend Amy, who persuaded me to come on this thing in the first place. And the Dumpty Dum Live was fab. Well done, guys. It was great. I'm now going to stop waffling. Enjoy, be happy, and I'll speak to you soon.
Aww.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First, I very much enjoyed listening to the live Dumpty Dum show. Well done, all of you. And then had the pleasure to host Jet Setting Lucy at New York's Dumpty Dum Meetup at Norwood Club on Friday night. In addition to myself and Lucy, New York Nigel, noted Dumpty Dum sibling Sheila Maguire, Jenna, Sue, Paul, Juliet, Michelle and Brian, and Teresa and Philippe, all the way from Fort William, Scotland, having just disembarked from a transatlantic cruise earlier in the day, were in attendance. We had a great time over drinks and dinner. Let's do it again when Royfield is in town. Otherwise, just a couple of brief notes on the last few days in Ambridge. As I alluded to on social media, the helicopter mother, who is Elizabeth, seemingly crashed and burned this week. She projected her anger onto others and held onto the fantasy of saving Freddie from prison for a crime he committed, even after he told her to bugger off and let him do his time. Elizabeth needs to fully accept that Freddie's behavior was illegal and put others at risk. Until then, she will not be able to board that flight out of Egypt, i.e., the land of denial. Other observation. Good for you, Adam, for standing up to Brian. But why does it seem that whenever you get angry, you always seem to be on the edge of becoming unhinged? My advice to you is to keep it more together when you want to confront someone, especially Brian. Well, that's it for now. We'll talk to you all soon.
Why were you in New York? Do you have a lot of business to do there or something?
No, just a little holier. A little holiday.
Awesome. Well, Luke's not in New York. He's in California.
Hello, guys. Have you noticed that Freddie's beginning to sound like a football commentator? I find this a very, very exciting development. Thank you very much for the show. You guys are brilliant. See you later. Bye.
He does have a weird speaking pattern, doesn't he, our Freddie?
Yes, he does. But I think it's quite accurate he's not a public school, he's a private school boy. And he also tries to, like when he's in the prison, he tries to deliberately, sort of slide it down a bit, because if anyone's listening, he doesn't want it, you know, he doesn't want them to hear him talking like that. And, I think it is odd, but I think it's quite accurate for his background and his age. And they all speak peculiarly, teenagers anyway, don't they? I'd noticed with my children, because they've been brought up in London, well, I suppose it's all children actually, they kind of have a very, they're total accent chameleons, and they slide up and down the scale of everything depending on who they're talking to. And William wears his headset when he's when you play games across the internet. So he's playing with his mates, and he'll turn to me and I say, "Will, do you want a drink?" And he'll say, "Yes, please. Can I have hot chocolate?" Then he puts his headphones on and goes, "What's up, dude?" to his friend. Or now, what did he say? "All right, geese," he said the other day to his little friend. And I thought, yeah, you've completely got at least three voices, and I probably only hear one of them, don't I, most of the time. But it does just really make me laugh. And I think teenagers in particular, it's kind of like they try out several accents and several voices before they settle on one. I'm not sure Freddie's settled yet.
it's an interesting point. In America, they call it code switching. That, and it's the ability to deliver a conversation to different audiences in different ways. And it's one of the big issues in the kind of African-American community about, you know, back in the 1980s, things was
strong. What's it called again?
Code switching. So
what?
Code switching.
Code switching. Okay.
Yeah. So in the 80s, you had the rise of Eubonics, and it's a case of this is the way that African-Americans speak. We can speak like that, and we're going to teach this in university. And then, you know, you realize very quickly that professionally it's a dead end. You're going to get any job, any white collar job. You cannot speak like that. So there's this recognition of the fact that like what African-Americans need to do, and of which many people do anyway, which William is doing, is code switching. The way that you speak to one person isn't necessarily the way you speak to another, right? And like somebody like Barack Obama actually was not a code switcher. That's just the way that he spoke, and he spoke in a way which is quite, which was, you know, was totally received American kind of diction. Whereas somebody like the Reverend Al Sharpton doesn't code switch.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you could very well argue that America will get its first black president when that president doesn't have to code switch. He can speak in a way which is recognizably African American to a white audience.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
I love all that kind of stuff. Now,
yeah.
Luce.
Yes.
Shall we have.
Who have we got now?
I think it's Ben. Well, I don't think I know actually, because my knob here says Ben. So I'll hit it and we'll hear Ben. Okay, my patch. It's my little sound patch.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Welsh Ben from Coventry. I'm a first-time caller and error, so you'll want my credentials. I'm an early 40s test engineer, originally from Wales, and I started listening about the time that Abby Tucker was born, so I guess that makes me an Abby. I want to talk to you about Hannah. I want to defend her. There's been a lot of negativity towards her, mainly from her opinions about Neil, but she doesn't have our history with him. She's only seen the side of him that can't manage people, technology, or a large big operation generally. All concerns that he has tried to voice to Susan himself, not that she seems to listen. Hannah's also seen him try to use his position to get him a preferential treatment with regards to the affordable homes, so please give her a break. Can understand most of her opinions. I enjoyed the live recording last week. I was the rugged bearded gentleman three rows behind Yokel Beer, clapping like a 12-year-old fangirl. Thanks, Dumpty Dum. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much for calling in, Ben. I think actually my opinion of Hannah has gone up.
Really?
Because she was, yeah, because she did exactly what she said she would do. What I was worried would happen was that she would say to
Tom,
yeah, it's all completely cool. Honestly, I understand about you and Hannah and don't worry about it. And, you know, we're just a casual thing. And if anything more significant comes up, then that's fine. And I thought, I don't know if when it actually comes to it, she'll suddenly start going, oh, what do you mean? Da, da, da. Well, what has she got? I've got, you know, and be arsy and make him feel bad.
Lucy, give but it actually, time. Give it she, time.
Really?
Give it time.
No, but she was so good. And I thought, I really hope that she does.
There's no
she
way.
She is as cool.
There's no way that this that triangle has been set up without some kind of dramatic payoff. No way. So I'm not saying necessarily that it'll be her that will say that she'll, you know, realize that actually when Tom is doing the thing with Natasha that she really likes Tom. But there's going to be some payoff. Why else have they been bonking each other on a docudrama?
I think that they are trying to show A, Tom's lack of confidence in himself, and B, the fact that she is genuinely not a, you know, what would be seen as a traditional woman in a soap, that she's stronger than that or more interesting than that.
I take that and I probably agree, right? But there's going to be some fallout somewhere. As sure as eggs is eggs, right? As sure as Neil's eggs are Neil's eggs, right? There has to be. There just absolutely has to be. Oh, it's Josh's eggs, wasn't it? Not Neil's. I do like the fact that they're setting her up to be, as you said, this sexually confident young woman. And that's all to the good. But
hang on a sec, sorry. What's happened to those eggs, by the way?
12-minute continuous soap. So some shit will hit a fan sooner or later.
Now we've done that call, should we have a little bit of our Dusty?
Yes.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. First of all, can I say how much I enjoyed hearing the live Dumpty Dum from Birmingham? I was really sorry not to get there, but it sounded as if you'd all had a smashing time, so hopefully I can get to another one. You asked three questions on Facebook for us to answer. How will Lizzie cope? Very badly, with any luck. along with Vanessa Whitburn, she was the architect of much of her misfortune, so a little bit of schadenfreude there. I think she's going to have to go into partnership with Oliver at some point, assuming Lewis isn't hiding behind a cupboard or something, because he could probably take over the license and give her a bit of moral support. The next question was, are Tom and Hannah really over? My answer is, I don't really care as long as I don't have to hear it. The question about Christine's hip, I think it's a brilliant issue to be covering, because I expect a lot of families like mine have had to face this sort of issue in the past and probably again in the future without the resources that Mar Woolley can throw at it. So I'm looking forward to hearing how that pans out. The really big issue that you didn't ask about was Alistair's broad bean recipe. That sounded incredibly soignee. So I'm hoping for more culinary tips from Alistair and Jimus in the future. I think that's about it from me. So love to you all and bye.
Bye-bye, Dusty. What's your recipe of the week?
You can't have broad bean. Broad bean's resolutely unswanye. Yes.
Like, I don't even know what language you're speaking now.
Never mind.
I really don't. you know what's really lovely when you get a ton load of calls? It feels like the old days, as I said before. And talking about the old days, let's have a break. Touch camp coffee. Come back the other side with some socials.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
G'day, everyone. Hope you had a wonderful time at the live podcast, but we're back to our traditional methods today, and it's my turn. And just want to refer you to a post on the Dumpty Dum forum, which is a prediction for Elizabeth. So go and have a look at that if you'd like to see what Yorkshire Lass has to say about her prediction for the immediate future for both Freddie and Lizzie. I also have a quick message from Melissa Williams, who's been contacting us on Facebook to say that she's having problems registering on the website. And I just want to assure anyone who's having problems, we are looking into it. And hopefully we'll have an update for you soon. Really appreciate that you contact us, because if you don't tell us, then we don't know. We had a lot of discussion this week, and it was mainly about Lizzie and Freddie. We asked who we felt more sorry for. Did we feel sorry for Freddie or for Lizzie? And people were right down the middle or just neither. Laura Jackson fell into that category. She said neither. Freddie landed himself in the clink by dealing illegal drugs. Lizzie's not accepted the fact that Freddie is and was a drug dealer, and she has to pay the consequences. Laura Jo Elzinger said Lizzie, she may not have been that great of a mother, but that's not a crime. She's paying the price of losing a license because of something another adult did. Strictly speaking, she really didn't have any control over what happened. And Sasha Manish said, Freddie, as John said, getting beat up isn't supposed to be a part of the punishment. Lizzie has no idea what to do at the moment, but she has support. John Kelston Merritt, to whom Sasha mentioned, says both. Freddie's punishment is his incarceration, not them being beaten up by fellow prisoners. And Elizabeth has done her best to bring her children up to be good kids and behave responsibly. Freddie has failed her and the principle she stands for. And to see her son, the son that she loves, being beaten must be a parent's worst nightmare. So Elizabeth is feeling a failure as a mother and unable to protect the child she loves. On top of that, her daughter has run off with a little shit. Or would I say, as I would say, a big shit. So, yes, very, very much down the middle. If you'd like to get involved in that debate, please do. But it was just interesting to have different people's perspectives. I must admit, I think she's very much out of order the way she's speaking to people and expecting them to just blindly follow her and to support her despite his behaviour. So I'm struggling with her a bit. But we also wanted to talk about Brian and Adam and whether Brian was out of order or was Adam's response reasonable. Now, I was a bit taken aback by the way Brian spoke to Lizzie earlier in the week, and I actually thought it was a bit out of character, if I'm honest. But we asked the question, was Brian out of order or was Adam out of order? And Lynn Griffith said, whilst I could understand Adam's anger, I thought he's referring to Eddie as paid staff a little high-handed and pompous. Perhaps simply saying not in front of Eddie Grundy might not have jarred in the same way. But as a poster on another thread pointed out, he might have used such language thinking that was more in the spirit of Brian's idiolect. Personally, it made him seem even more of a snob than usual. I agree, Lynn. When I first heard it, I thought that was a bit of a strange phrase. And then I thought, oh, no, he's just talking Brian's language, isn't he? Because that's how Brian likes to think of himself, as having hired help, which Eddie is. As an employee, he is hired help. But who uses that phraseology these days? And Denise Ann Smallwood said, I think Adam referring to Eddie as paid help was meant to be a typical pompous Brian phrase. So I think we're all in furious agreement over this. Plant Man said, Brian's always out of order. He's more out of order than a Kit Kat machine on the Piccadilly line, which never worked despite repeated kickings. I lost 2 shillings. Now, I realised that that went a little off-piste, that, but it was just so funny I had to include it. And Will Ramsey said, from an agronomy point of view, re-drilling barley isn't a great idea. Pretty late, blind leading the blind. Thank you for your obviously well-educated input there. I mean, I wouldn't know. And I live right in the middle of farming country in northern Victoria, and I still wouldn't know. And Marie Harris said, it's 2 yeses from me. My brother texted me, top job, Adam, after that scene. I was just about to send in the same message. Brian is such a phenomenal hypocrite, and Adam was a mistake. His havoc was deliberate. So, great as usual, robust and funny, and you all get involved, and we absolutely love that. So it's Yokel Bear's turn next week. So if you would like to get involved with talking to Yokel Bear online, and sometimes we both chip in anyway, because we can't help ourselves, and sometimes Witherspoon's there, and as you know, he puts up a Saturday non-Archers post. Please get involved with us on Dumpty Dum, the Archers fans podcast. Just look us up, and we would love to see you there. Until I speak to you next time.
Thank you for that, Millie. Lucy, it's time for you to hit us with some tweets.
Okay. Willem Harvey. Imagine being at a karate class with Shula and Helen and having the opportunity to kick them with impunity. Who could resist? Mm-hmm. Sam Mary D, Mark 21. I don't think they transfer people because they're missing quail's eggs and quinoa, Lizzie. Jem Butters said... this is when Jimus was banging on about Freddie being, you know, when he was comparing the gin and Freddie being in prison for drugs. He said, quote, one local purveyor of intoxicants. Jim is such a perfect exemplar of pomposity. I shall endeavour to do my utmost to emulate him. He does sometimes, yeah, Jimus sometimes goes slightly over the top, but in a very nice way. Kernow 27 was talking about Eddie and his Portaloo and said, great, a chance to tweet about Eddie the shitter fitter on Twitter. And Feeksby said, the only argument for Jazza and Hannah getting together is that we get to call them Jazz Hams.
Hey. Very, very, very good. Dumtydum.com, folks. It's somewhat of a bane of our existence, but right here and now it fundamentally works. It's up. So go there, be part of the forum and do stuff, because yes, doing stuff is good. Though, there is another little hitch, which isn't to do with hacking or anything like that, actually can't register at the moment.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, no, you can log in, but you can't sign up as a new person. Okay. Somebody did email me and go, what the hell, dude? Can't sign up. I want to sign up. And then I went and checked it, and they were correct. And I couldn't correct it. So, yet again, some person from some far distant shore who's a turkey expert is going to have to come along and fix it, which is, Jesus, cat, get out of the way. Cat has just walked right in front of the mic and then, no, I'm not feeding you.
Well, it sounded like the cat came in and slammed the door, which was quite...
It head-butted the door open 1 minute. Just get him out of here and he's rolling around on the bed 1 minute. No, Dexter. Bloody hell. Dex, go.
He won't go, Royford. He's a cat. They don't do what you tell them.
That was proper drama, that was. Right, like deliberately walked right over the microphone in front of the script, threatened to walk on the keyboard, and then starts rolling around and headbutting me because he wants to play. Fuck off!
I love right. your... I mean, we have to keep that in. I love your daily battles with the animal kingdom. Royfield Brown, like the anti-James Herriot.
Thank you. Right, where were we? I was talking about dumdydum.com. Yeah, so this has a neat link for me to talk about Patreon. So if you want to help to support our podcast, you can go to patreon.com and give us $2 a show. And it's in dollars, folks, because Patreon is an American platform and they don't do pounds as a currency. So there's no funniness going on, as somebody once wrote on on iTunes as a review. It's just in dollars. We can't help it. It just is like that. It's nothing to do with Russian hacking. And I presume then it would be in rubles. So, but anyway...
And also, sorry if I know I now sound completely different than I did at the start of the podcast. We've the technical problems on this one have been unbelievable. So this is about our fifth attempt. So in between cats and Zencaster falling over repeatedly and everything else, it's been a bit of a nightmare, this one.
Oh, and special shout out goes out to Auntie Jean that retweeted my seemingly passive-aggressive tweet, which I sent out to Zencaster yesterday, moaning about their lack of software stability. And Auntie Jean obviously figured that this is one of the reasons why Dumdydum has been late this week, and she retweeted it. And all those people that liked that tweet, big ups and thumbs up to you, because we did have a Bill and Ted, it all rolled up into one person from Zencaster, messaging me and then talking to me yesterday about...
I've never had an IT, because I was on the call for some of it, and I've never had an IT call where the person has called the client dude. That was quite interesting.
Yes, yesterday's a very interesting day. Very interesting day. So Patreon, go help us. Go give us a little bit of your hard-earned cash. We'll squander it on software development and keeping the website up and stuff like that. And then I really should think, really. I don't know how to say this without looking at the script, but I just can't think how we do it. And remember to get in contact. You can message us via SpeakPipe on our website, which is, of course, dumdydum.com. Hit the little red tab, or you can call us on 02030313105 to leave us a message from Ifun. Juicy Loose.
Yes.
How can people find you on the Twitters?
I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
And I am, of course, at Royfield, which is R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. And together we are Dumdydum. And, of course, on Facebook, you just type in Dumdydum and you can find us there. Though Lucy is conspicuous by her absence on Facebook. I'm hardly ever there either. We just leave that to Millie Bell, Yokel Bear, and to the wonderful Witherspoon, and they managed to keep things all tickety-boo on that platform. Luce, it's just about the end of the show. I'm thinking next week, you know what we should do?
What?
Map Corner. There's such a demand for it.
From who? You.
Titian, Auntie Jean, the list goes on and on. Claire Asprey, people love it. You know, they love it. They love talking about maps over the radio, because it's the perfect platform for it. But I tell you what we really should do, though, jokes aside, Also, Deborah, Nissi, I could go on. Aurora, Fanny Pants. Everybody loves a bit of Map Corner apart from you. You bloody miserable old sod. Right, Dan Lord. The list really does go on.
That was four people. That is not a meaningless list.
Aaron Cunningham, Anna Amelia, Catherine Rowan Jones, Dan Lord.
You're just making up names now.
No, I'm not. Bly Spirit. How are these names made up? You've heard them ad nauseum.
I know, you're just repeating names you know and pretending that those people...
No, are. Celebrating Adam sent in a map, Purple Pumpkin sent in a map, Miriam sent in a map, Witherspoon sent in a map. I could go on, but I won't. I could say Bimpy Archer sent in a map, but I won't. That'd be really stretching a point. I could add Andrew Horn to that, but I won't. I could go on. Anyway... but what we really should do next week is do our periodic roundup to thank people for writing us reviews on iTunes, because that's just a nice thing to do. And also it's just a cynical attempt just to get more reviews on iTunes. Because when you mention people's names, people go, "Ooh, I'll get on the podcast, I'll write a review." But then we'll just dress it up as us just thanking people nicely because we're just nice people. And we are, in part, but also we're cynical, bitten podcasts that need more reviews. Awesome. Now, we've just about done this show, but this is the time where you say something outrageously funny or insightful. So go, because I've got nothing as normal.
I have nothing. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I haven't even had coffee yet. I've got nothing, Royfield.
You've been up for about 3 hours.
I haven't. Well, it all went a bit funny this morning because my son doesn't have to be to school until 11 o'clock this morning. And... Huh. Yes. For peculiar reasons, my partner left for work at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I sort of woke up at five and then went back to sleep and then had those really, really weird dreams where you're a half asleep dream, which is much, much worse than a proper dream. Because they're incredibly vivid and really hallucinogenic and, you know, ugh, horrible. I dreamt I had to take a load of small children swimming and they all kept drowning. It was awful. So anyway, yes, I'm not very with it. Still worrying about all the drowned children.
Because sometimes, quite often, too often actually, I fall asleep with headphones on.
Right.
Listening to a podcast. And then I just let them just run. So they just autoplay one after the other. So it's a way of me actually just sifting out, because I've got too many podcasts to listen to during the week.
Yeah.
Quite often I have that kind of semi-lucid dream where I'm dreaming about the podcast.
Yeah.
And... so a couple of times last week, same thing happened. I was talking to a group of people, having a conversation, like a dinner party, and I kept on wanting to butt in, but they wouldn't let me butt in, right? And the host kept on looking at me saying, okay, I'm going to ask you a question next, or you can put your point next. And then somebody else would just keep talking. And I'm getting so frustrated and so angry. I woke up, of course, I'm listening to a debate podcast. And that happened twice. But then, was it yesterday, the morning before? Because, no, my cold, my Maltese cold flu thing is just about abated, just about. You know, a little bit of a still left within me, but fundamentally, most of the snot and phlegm is just about gone.
Good.
Anyway, I was feverish as hell. Was it Monday morning, Tuesday morning, one or t'other, I can't remember. Right, and... had this dream that I had, dare I say it, the nicest wee. You know when you're just bursting for a wee and you just go, oh, the relief on your whole system as it drains out, which is only something which you appreciate, I think, after about the age of 35 or so, having a good wee. Right. My God, Lucy, did I wake up with a start? I nearly wet the bed. I went, oh my God, like halfway through this wonderful wee, I woke up and went, hold on a minute. Oh my God. I was seconds away from having a senior moment in my own bed. I tell you, it was all dreadful, 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 dreadful.
Well, anyway. That fits in with the week, because this whole week on Ambridge has been about old people's continence problems. Auntie Cardboard not getting to the loo on time, you know, because and Auntie Peggy having to get Auntie Cardboard to the loo, and Joe having a waz all over the yard of Grange Farm because there's no loo and he has to get his muddy boots through Grange Farm. So it's this very apposite that you nearly wet the bed, Royfield.
Thank you.
Well done.
I ate growing old. It's rubbish, Lucy. I wouldn't recommend the young try it, I tell you.
It's better than the alternative, though, let's face it.
Which is what? Staying young forever?
No, being dead.
Anyway.
I think on the whole, I'd rather grow old, anyway.
Would you? I don't know. I'm thinking.
Yes.
Well, I'm at like pivotal age. My next birthday is somewhat of a milestone. I'm thinking I might just go out in the blaze of glory beforehand.
Are you 50?
How very dare you? I'm 49.
Okay, sorry. I mean, you next birthday you are.
Yeah. It's horrid.
Oh.
What's the point of it? What's the point of little me ever being 50?
Little you.
Well, according to you, I'm hardly tall, am I?
The fact that you think of yourself as little me is quite worrying in itself and says a lot, Royfield.
Well, no, I think, yeah, but it's because I think that I've obviously not done much, and I'm a little bit of a, you know, you've done stuff.
So have you.
Such as?
Oh, I'm not going to list your achievements, Royfield. This isn't a school.
Because you can't.
All right.
Whatever. I'm having a crisis here, and you're supposed to be a friend, supposed to be propping me up and whatever, and you're just going, you know, dismissing my angst. And I find that very, very, very cold, actually, Freeman. Very cold indeed. I'm having a crisis. I'm 50 this year. And
you've been having a crisis about how old you are as long as I've known you, which is 3 years.
Actually, you can't count. It's four and a bit.
Four and a bit years. Yes.
Well, I've always been getting older. Who wants to do that? That's the whole point of it. Anyway, you are right. This is nothing new. It's just that I've got something really to moan about this year because the big 5-0 going to be attached to me.
Listen, you are healthy. You have lovely children.
Did you hear way I started the show yesterday, the recording, two days ago.
I mean, yes, all right, you've got a bit of a...
There you go. Not healthy.
Nothing wrong with you. You are healthy.
Have you just heard my throat?
Shut up. You travel the world doing a job that you really, really love. You've got lots of people around that love you. You have got good friends and lovely family, and I know they're lovely because I've met your parents. So
okay, fair dues about my mum and dad.
Yes, and lovely
friends.
Children. Right, well, I'm glad to see that you're taking this in the mature fashion with which you take everything. And you have a job that you...
message me when they want cash.
You have... Well, that's
Dad,
why do that? And I live with
them. On ASOS. I was just wondering.
Tilly said to me yesterday, can I borrow some money to go out for pizza with Casper,
uh-huh,
my friend? And I said, what have you spent your money on? So she gave me this great big list of what she... Well, I just had to get these tickets for this gig and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I had to, because otherwise it's not until February, but they would all have sold out. Rubbish, rubbish, rubbish. Anyway, so I said, okay. So I said, this is a loan. You can pay me back. And she said, yes, 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 yes. And then she went out of the room with my card, and then she came back later, and then she said, was this a special treat for me because I did so well in the Latin test? And I said, no, it's still a loan. You did. And she does, you know, that face, the sort of the sidelong, fluttery eyelashes face, like, this is now a loan, isn't it? Because I'm just going to remind you of all the good things I've done. Anyway, listen, this will cheer you up, right? No matter how bad you think your life is, I have just looked at the Daily Mirror website.
Mm.
And this is what I love. I love the headlines on the Daily Mirror website. Right. Ready?
Yes.
No matter how bad your life is, this has never happened. Family party for dead aunt turns into mass brawl with bucket of sick knocked over policeman. There you go. Not only are you not the dead aunt, you're not at a family party that's turned into a mass brawl. You're not at a party that features a bucket of sick, and you didn't have it knocked over you by a policeman. So there you go. Something to be grateful for.
That is true. There's a tremendous video on the Twitters.
Doesn't involve a bucket of sick, does it?
It involves the caption, never mess with a black aunt. Right. You can walk through the most dangerous of neighbourhoods and whatever. And you will be safer than anything if you have your maiden aunt with you, your maiden black aunt. There's this little kid, this video, she's obviously taken the video, little kid in this mall in America being held by a policeman, and he's got his arm at some horrible angle. The kid's no more than about 10, 11. Right. This is a kid. We're not talking about some burly teenager. And his aunt's filming it, is saying, why are you holding him like that? And the kid is being super chill and calm. Mm. And the policeman is saying, you did that, you're going to do that again, I'm going to... And she says, let go of his arm, he's not going anywhere, I've got his father on the phone, I'm his auntie, blah, blah, blah. Policeman doesn't let go of it. And she says, I'm not going to tell you again, let go of his arm. She just goes, bish, bosh, bang. The camera goes all over the place. And she's like, let go of that, you motherfucker. Oh, that poor policeman. Yeah, anyway. Right, so I think we've just about done, haven't we? So we've got great things to come next week. Touch a Map Corner, your favourite bit. We're going to thank loads of people for writing us reviews because that is actually a really nice thing, and we do really appreciate them. And we've got more archers to talk about.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, let's hope so, unless something goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, I'll be another week older. Oh, fuck.
Oh. All right. Yeah, but there wasn't a bucket of stick. So, you know, always an upside.
There's the show, folks. Well done, you. All right, let's hit stop.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.